Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Imprint Companion. I am Blake Howard, one half of your co-hosting Physical Media Obsessed team. The other co-host is, of course, the beautiful, the Greek King, Alexi Toliopoulos.
My pleasure to be here. My pleasure to be spinning the discs with you one more time.
This show, what is it about? We take the beautiful collection of Imprint films, a boutique Blu-ray label here in Australia, and we unpack every single batch they've got coming through. It's going to feel like we're talking about something so far in the past, but we're talking about April. Imprint has put out so much stuff very recently that their April batch pushed into May. May is pushed into June. So we're covering April, which is a monumental batch, but Alexi and I were both completely occupado, firstly in Sydney Film Festival things, and you were touring your amazing show. So we've now finally come back together, which gave us enough time to catch up on a bunch of the releases.
Been a pleasure getting through some movies because I've been away for so long. Getting back into my life of watching movies has been so enjoyable. And I'd say in big part because of like these bundles from Imprint coming through.
Yeah, so good. And big months coming ahead. But this batch, really interesting one, a totally jam-packed. Two Tales of Adventure collections 5 and 6. Flesh and Fantasy Dead of Night double feature. It came from Outer Space 4K. Bride of Vengeance and Ivy. Lex, do you want to kick off with the beautiful 4K, you know, leading person of this ensemble? It came from outer space.
It came from outer space, the 1953 classic science fiction film based on an idea by Ray Bradbury. It came from outer space is one of the most beloved sci-fi films from the 1950s and a must-see for fans of War of the Worlds. Starring Richard Carlson, Creature of the Black Lagoon, and Barbara Rush when Worlds Collide, who won a Golden Globe for her performance, which is crazy to think of for a 50s sci-fi film. Crazy. Our limited edition release includes the classic film in 2D on 4K UHD and Blu-ray, the 3D version of the film, and the made-for-TV sequel, It Came From Outer Space. It is sure to say that this Imprint film edition of It Came From Outer Space is absolutely stacked. I'll give you a little synopsis before I tell you my thoughts on the film as well. An amateur astronomer and his fiancée are branded crackpots when witnessing a spaceship crash to the ground, a mysterious creature who disappears into the darkness. Before long, strange things begin to happen, but will the tide of disbelief turn in time? So, It Came From Outer Space is kind of your standard style 1950s sci-fi film. There's paranoia involved. There's trust and distrust. Something strange is going on. There's excellent effects. And it is kind of like in that same space as, you know, like those Visitor from Another World type things.
Yeah, yeah.
But what makes this better than a lot of the others in that competition is it's directed by one of my favorite horror guys of that time. Comes from horror genre guys from that time, Jack Arnold, who did, I think, outside of It Came From Outer Space, the two films he's best known for are two of the best of the era, Creature from the Black Lagoon and The Incredible Shrinking Man. So right. Both of those films exhibit an incredible technical know-how of how to bring these genre stories to life and to make them so vibrant and beautiful. Came From Outer Space is no different. And I will say this 4K transfer restoration is one of the most beautiful freaking things I've seen all year.
You're not
going to be shocked by this movie. You're not even going to be really surprised by it. Is it as good as Creature of the Black Lagoon? Is it as good as Incredible Shrinking Man? Not quite, but Jack Arnold is such a fantastic director. To see anything of his is pure joy. And to see one of his films be treated this beautifully, especially it's not quite as well known as those other two, not quite as big a classic, it just really, it felt like such a joy, such a blessing. I give this like a huge, huge recommendation.
Right.
It just looked so beautiful. And if you're kind of like that sucker for that early 1950s science fiction, especially those kind of like takes from like your Ray Bradbury's, those those films that are adapted from like an H.G. Wells or a Ray Bradbury into that kind of 1950s style just works so well. And it's one that I think should be in that same conversation as War of the Worlds and when worlds collide and stuff. It really does. They've nailed everything with this. I have yet to get into that made-for-TV movie, but I do feel that it will be in my future. And I am still someone that's held on to a spare 3D TV.
Wow.
That I will be checking out that 3D look as well, because I think the Creature of the Black Lagoon 3D Blu-ray is one of my favorite things I've ever owned. So to have more Jack Arnold on 3D for home viewing could not be a happier chappy.
Oh, that's so good. I'm going to jump straight from you talking about Jack Arnold to a film that's couched in a pretty amazing set. Three of the movies in this set are absolutely incredible, but the name I want you to hear first and hear me is John Guilliman. So the Tales of Adventure Collection 6 features four films, Lex. Those four are King Rat, Counterattack, Abandoned Ship, and The Bridge at Remagen. And this set is like Tales of Adventure takes to the land and sea in four epic stories of human survival facing extreme adversity. So survival stories broadly. But I want you guys to listen to a little trailer of The Bridge at Remagen, and then I'm going to come back, read you the package, and share why Lex needs to make this accelerated on the top watch list.
Wow.
At the outset of the Second World War, 136 bridges spanned the Rhine River into the heart of Germany. As the Allies chased the fleeing Nazis back into the fatherland, these bridges were methodically destroyed by Allied bombers and by German demolition teams. On March 7th, 1945, a single bridge remained. What had once been an insignificant railroad trestle was now the single most important objective in the European campaign. This was the bridge at Remagen.
The Germans forgot one little bridge. 61 days later, they lost the war. During the closing months of World War II, a desperate skirmish transpires between an American lieutenant and a Nazi major as the Allies advance on Remagen and target a strategically located bridge across the Rhine. So there's two movies that are based on bridges here. This movie, Bridge at Remagen, is directed by John Guilliman. And if you don't know that name just off the top of your head, he did King Kong and King Kong Lives, like 76 oh, King Kong, 86 yeah. King Kong Lives. He did The Bridge at Remagen, which is like his fifth best known movie if you're looking at Letterboxd. But it's also the 78 Death on the Nile and The Towering Inferno in 74.
Oh. Okay, quite the pedigree when it comes to disastrous movies.
Disaster movies, big movies. Now, this cast features George Segal and Ben Gazzara as buddies.
Oh, my God.
They are the lead characters on the good side. The bad Nazi is played by Robert Vaughn. And it is a terrific story about this small crew that is in Germany trying to get to this bridge, and this bad German guy basically illegally doing an operation to destroy the bridge, to cut Germany off. And he's sort of trying to entrap as many Americans and Allied troops that are encroaching as possible. And it's just this amazing story that has such phenomenal scale. John Guilliman is like commanding an epic budget. The whole time I was watching it, I was my wife was doom scrolling next to me while I'm watching it. And I'm like, I just can't believe how many people are in this shot. I just can't believe
Unreal.
How many tanks are here. Is that, that's a real train. How did this must be on location. And so I was watching this movie and I was just completely blown away by it. It's like a proper like adventure story, old World War II adventure story, but just the kind of like emerging new Hollywood sensibility of guys that they're targeting in this role starts to give it like a little bit of extra dimensionality and flavor, especially in the performances. Much more complex, nuanced, lots of moral ambiguity, just sublime mixed with gargantuan excess. And it rules top to bottom, and it's absolutely the diamond in this set. Like,
wow.
Go and get it. And I just couldn't believe I was watching a war movie with George Segal and Ben Gazzara that I'd never heard of before.
Never heard of it. I can't believe this. What a find.
What a find.
What a find.
What a find. It's this bad boy. I'm holding it up for Lex to see on our little Zoom chat here. It's amazing. There is another bridge movie in this, which is really, really quite fun. This is a Paul Muni one. It's called Counterattack.
Oh, I love Paul Muni.
So it's a mission to capture a Nazi officer deep inside enemy-held territory. A paratrooper, Alexei Kulkov, ends up trapped inside a basement of a bombed-out building along with fellow Russians, a fellow Russian and eight German soldiers. Now, this one, a bunch of guys, they paratroop in and they sneak into a German camp. They kind of blow it apart, but then their skirmish goes wrong because their German backup comes. And Paul Muni has to go downstairs and basically be in a bunker, a basement, where he's trapped with one other female soldier who's on his side and a whole bunch of Nazis. And it's this really amazing thing of him going through, trying to tease out who's the commanding officer, trying to pull information out, trying to see where the German position is for a future attack. So it ends up being like, it starts off like swashbuckling and ends up as a psychological thriller, which is quite good. Very high stakes, very like intimate, intense, really good. Mm. And Muni is fantastic in this space. And this is another one completely off the war subject called Abandoned Ship. And it stars Tyrone Power. And it's a luxury liner sinks into the ocean. You never see the sinking, but you find all of the people who are left alive gathering together on the last remaining lifeboat and trying to stay alive. And it's based on a true story. And basically you get the last remaining person in that hierarchy has to make all these terrible, tough decisions about who gets to live and who gets to die. And it's a really amazing little movie. It's not that long. Cool. It only goes for an hour and 37 minutes, but at the end of it, it has this like really of its time, because it's a 1957 movie. Has this really interesting like voiceover. What would you have done? You know, like what would you have done in that same situation?
To make it the moral connection with the audience.
Yeah. And I think it was kind of overkill, as movies in the 50s probably were a little bit more overkill, but it genuinely was like a holy shit. How could you ever feel good about who you are and life itself again, if you had to make these decisions? And it was really fascinating. So that kind of warring set, King Rat is the fourth member, but I'm only going to talk about the top three. The absolute gold star, the diamond at the top, is the Bridge at Remagen, and Counterattack and Abandoned Ship both really pulling their weight there. But the gold is, if you need them in your collection, Bridge at Remagen, very cool. 1969, World War II, terrific, great cast, top to bottom.
Beautiful.
From deep behind enemy lines, we're going to a horror double feature, two classic anthology films from the 40s, Flesh and Fantasy, Dead and Night. Let's listen to a trailer and then Lex, you can come back and tell me all about them.
Speak out, man. What is in my hand?
Murder.
I'm not a murderer. It is written in my hand. Nothing to do with it.
Just room for one inside, sir.
I think this is such a winning double bill coming from Imprint to expose, I think, a new audience to these two anthology films that both kind of play in the realm of horror, but more so in this supernatural sense. These two films are wonderfully paired together because they both collect like a bunch of different stories, give them a little bit of a framework. But of the two, I'll talk about Flesh and Fantasy first, from 1943. Flesh and Fantasy is three occult tales based on stories by Ellison Joseph, Oscar Wilde, and Laszlo Vadnais. Wow. When a jittery businessman complains of a disturbing dream, a friend relates three stories to help calm his nerves. The first, a homely dressmaker wears a mask of beauty to attract a man on Mardi Gras night. A fortune teller predicts an eminent lawyer will commit a murder, and a high wire artist, haunted by a nightmare which he suffers a fall, romances a woman who resembles one he had seen in his dream. This one really is a film that reminds me of like very much a precursor of The Twilight Zone. It's got really clean, crisp, beautiful black and white cinematography, an incredible cast that includes Edward G. Robinson Stanwyck.
Hell yeah.
Edward G. Robinson, of course, is always a joy to watch, and especially kind of in a genre space. I really love to see his heightened energy bring this kind of, the way that he heightens his performance, the way that it's pitched, when he's in genre pictures, it still grounds the entire film in a very interesting way. And I think playing in that kind of smaller scope of a supernatural horror film in this small anthology short story format works just beautifully. Of the two, I think this is the one that I prefer a little bit, Flesh and Fantasy, but only because it was newer to me. I had seen the other film, Dead of Night, a few more times in my life. It was one that was a bit of a video store discovery for me back in the day. But Dead of Night is a more spookier themed anthology with stories from H.G. Wells, John Baines, E.F. Benson, and Angus MacPhail. They're all kind of framed as these nightmares for the people in them, which reminds me of the beginning to The Bride of Frankenstein, where it's like Mary Shelley and Percy Blythe and all those crazy cats wake up from another freaky night of nightmares and they've got more things to talk about. So it's people relaying nightmares to each other, which is a fun framework, I think, for this kind of story. And this was this is an interesting one because I think probably because of the pedigree and the popularity of H.G. Wells being translated to film, this was like a rather big hit when it came out, and it kind of put this anthology-style storytelling in a genre sense on a map. You know, there would have been some stuff that were from like the silent era, but
like novels, but not in cinema like this. Novels, you know, even comic books, like early, like, you know, graphic novels and stuff like that, like the very earliest, you know, what are they called? I'm always, you know, the newspaper comic strips, rather strips, yeah, you know, exactly. Anthologies, you know, rather than something like that. Well, that sounds awesome. Flesh and Fantasy sounds fantastic.
Yeah, they're both really worth your time, especially if you're kind of like on the hunt for those horror supernatural anthologies. I always feel like they play so well around Halloween because you get a little bit of a taste of a few different feelings, a few different types of horror, a few different types of like spooky scares. So
Maybe we can line them up in an October, a Last Video Store kind of imprint companion, like you and I can put our heads together and just go like, let's go back to our shelves.
Yeah.
With that imprint collection and just try and like, we've got the classic horror stuff in there. We'll put all the classics, you know, the Halloweens and the Exorcists and, you know, contemporary ones. If you're a Hereditary fan or a Midsommar, we'll get some of those in there. Conjuring. But I think we could go back to the shelf and just like pace them out because there's something kind of quaint and beautiful about some of these old stories.
Yeah, these are both lovely. This is such a winning box set. This is just a great double bill that delivers on everything you'd really want. I give this a very high recommendation as well. This has been a good month for me.
Yeah, this is good. I've got the last one we're going to cover is a single. We've been talking about box sets. We've been talking about huge, you know, multi-package. This is one of the sort of lingering single discs that are here. It's 1947's Ivy, directed by Sam Wood. So when Ivy, an Edwardian belle, begins to like Miles, a wealthy gentleman, she is unsure of what to do with her husband, Jarvis, and her lover, Dr. Roger. She makes a plan to poison her husband. Now, this movie, it stars the wonderful and the kind of wonderful and beautiful Joan Fontaine as Ivy. But this is a cool one because it was actually written by Charles Bennett. Now, Charles Bennett wrote, like, when I read you some of these, Lex, you're just going to go, holy hell. He wrote The 39 Steps. He wrote The Man Who Knew Too Much. He wrote Foreign Correspondent. Wow. He wrote Sabotage. He wrote Secret Agent. He's
all these Hitchcock classics.
Hitchcock classics and early classics. He's kind of the real pedigree here. Sam Wood, who was the director, made like A Night at the Opera. He made Marx Brothers. He was sort of a comedy guy, Hollywood Party. So he kind of made a few of those things. He's got For Whom the Bell Tolls in there, which is another big one, but it was more of a comedy-leaning director. And then you get to this, which is Ivy, and it's I think the log line kind of kills you because it kind of tells you what's going to happen. What happens is you start to really get to know Joan Fontaine's Ivy. She seems to be a woman that just like doesn't know what she wants, and everywhere there is this new level of attention. So she gets attention from her husband, she gets attention from another guy, and she's always trying to look at how to elevate herself from her station, and then slowly but surely just keeps making the most horrendous and awful and amoral decisions that she can possibly make to do that. And I just had such a great time with how this movie unfolds. I had a great time with people uncovering the mystery. I had a great time with just how the story like is paced and how people had their loyalty with Ivy till the end. So it's a real, like, I would really recommend it as a terrific little watch as a single disc. Just something to pick up. If you like a kind of old school thriller, very like, it's very much like a proto femme fatale, but it's kind of like a reluctant femme fatale. She doesn't know the impact she's got. So it's like really in that pocket. And especially because it's 47, it's not quite in the thick of like real urgent film noir at the time. It's not in that or normally considered, but I would definitely say it's like a satellite femme fatale, like one of those proto ones that you kind of need to fit if you're a noir fan. So looks stunning, beautiful. Bennett's writing is terrific, especially all the characters around her. She becomes as kind of the central, you know, ingenue's dude, not necessarily the most interesting character in the piece for the whole time. But man, I had a really great time with this one. It's got a really cool cast too. Some just like, you know, John Fontaine, Patrick Knowles, Herbert Marshall, Richard Ney, Cedric Hardwick. Very cool, like lots of faces you've seen in these movies before, and they were all just tremendous. I had a really good time. So a really good single disc. If you can't afford something else, but you like proto-noir, I think, you know, Ivy is a banger.
I can't wait to catch up with Ivy. Blake, I also caught up with a couple of other miscellanea in our bundles. One was the 4K upgrade to David Koepp's Stir of Echoes.
Great movie.
Starring Kevin Bacon, Catherine Erb. This is one that I always wanted to see. For some reason, I didn't get to it when we had the Blu-ray release a few months ago, maybe even a couple of years ago now. But Imprint have put out a new 4K that is more loaded and more beautiful than the Blu-ray. So I'm glad I freaking waited by accident. I had such a great time with this film, and the 4K is rather lovely. It is that tense kind of supernatural thriller, but what I think this does so well is it exhibits these moments of masterful mood control that I think I did not anticipate from this film. I thought this would be like a bit of a dirtier film, or like the kind of ugly sibling to The Sixth Sense, which was its contemporary film that got compared to a lot when it came out, because they both playing that same kind of spectral, phantasmagoric place in America. But this film has such an impressive cast. The way it plays between these moods of darkness and supernatural, but also grounding in like this kind of family dynamic, I think it's really good. And David Koepp is such a good screenwriter.
He screenwrote at least one of my favorite movies of the year, Black Bag.
Yeah, of course. And that's just one of his minor credits, I'd
it's
say.
It's a minor credit this year. He's probably written.
Yeah.
Did he write the new Jurassic, the new Jurassic movie as well, Kep? Or was
the
it just
new Jurassic?
The new Jurassic.
I don't know. Let me see if he's written it. Because he was the original Jurassic. It was Mission Impossible, Spider-Man, Lost World. I don't know. No, he hasn't. I don't think he's the credited writer, at least on the
Carlito's
new Jurassic.
Carlito's Way.
I mean, of course, it goes without saying my favorite movie.
Your favorite movie maybe ever. It's like,
yeah, maybe. I've seen it so many times in my life. But yeah, so I was really up for it. I really enjoyed this.
Can I just tell the listeners that you started moving your shoulders like Carlito when you said it's my favorite movie? I just started to see this swagger take over. It was very good. I wish for that moment, I wish it was a video podcast for that moment.
For that moment, I'll just do it for you guys. Call me up, get me on a video chat. I'll do the Carlito thing. I also watched another thing in the Imprint Asia. Recent Imprint Asia bundle called The Snake Prince, which is a Shaw Brothers production. Now, this is one of the wackiest films I've seen in quite some time. It is... God, I don't even know where to begin. I'm just going to read you from the back of the box. Versatile director Lo Chen and majestic star Ti Lung teamed up to make this remarkable, unusual fantasy horror epic. Ti Lung is the title character who lives on the snake mountain of Guangxi with his brothers, the Black Snake and the Yellow Snake, who have been trying to turn into humans for 1,000 years. Attracted by the sensual rain dance performed by 3 glorious tribeswomen of the nearby Mao village, they set into motion a tale of romance, greed, insanity, envy, lust, murder, and vengeance. And I don't think I mentioned in that back of the box at all, this is a musical. This is one of the wackier things I've seen in recent time. I had a tremendous time with this film. Just truly a bizarre musical fantasy. But the songs can be a bit slow and a bit boring. it's very much it's a bit of a skin flick as well. Like that also isn't mentioned in there. There's a lot of nudity in this thing. And it's like these slow moving songs. They're a little bit modern, a little bit funky, very odd music. But what is really cool?
Where's my goggle box episode of you watching this movie? You keep looking at the box.
I'm watching it like 11 p.m. And what is this? It keeps changing. I'm like, start lying down, then I end sitting up. Going, I don't know what's going on. It's very dreamlike.
Yeah.
But it's all about these incredible snake animatronic creations to me. This film,
right?
The animatronics in this are pretty freaking wild.
Love that.
So the Snake Prince is, I've honestly never seen anything quite like it. And it's, I don't even know if I'm giving a full-hearted recommendation, but it's so weird. Like, I want more people to see it so I can just talk to people about this.
I got to put that's on the list, because you've completely sold me. Guys, just before we do go, we have a massive double like set coming through from Imprint for May. So we've got the directed by David Lean Volume 1, which has In Which We Serve, This Happy Breed, Blithe Spirit, Brief Encounter, Great Expectations, and Oliver Twist. I'm a twist head from way back. There's also a Laurence Olivier's Shakespeare trilogy, Henry V, Hamlet, Richard III. Then we also have the last sort of main box in the main set is Film Focus from Carol Baker. I'm super interested in this. Something Wild, Sylvia, and Harlow. That is the kind of main box. Then for Imprint
and
Asia,
I'll give you a tease. I just watched Something Wild from that box set, and it is a freaking fascinating movie.
Oh, I can't wait to check it out. And then in the Imprint Asia side, we've got Shaw Shock, which is a Shaw Brothers collection, horror collection, The Only Maniac, Seating of a Ghost, and Sex Beyond the Grave. One of the greatest.
You need to read that again. Sorry, Blake. The first movie in the list.
Sorry, I'll say that again. The Oily Maniac. Sorry, I thought I said The Oily Maniac.
The Oily Maniac is one of the greatest titles I've ever come across for a film, and I cannot let you get it wrong.
That's the best title they've ever done. Oh, my God. The Oily Maniac. How dare I? Two others, The Lost Bladesman and Portrait in Crystal. Holy shit. I'm going to have to watch Something Wild and The Oily Maniac stat. So I might put up.
And I would say, don't do it as a double bill. That's my guidance to you.
I'm going to, just because I'm going to just like discombobulate my entire body. Lex, great talking to you, man. Thank you so much. Is there any outside of Imprint, anything you want to plug while we've got two more minutes with our great listeners?
Yes, check out the last video store, the show that I talk to interesting, cool, and fun people about their favorite movies. We just have Killing Heidi on this week, one of the coolest bands of my life. So very fun talking to them. We have got the Philippou Brothers on the record talking about Bring Her Back. And upcoming episodes include Hilltop Hoods and Demi Adigiwebe, the Letterboxd icon. So lots of cool people coming up.
Wow, you got Demi.
Yes, I guest spotted on Demi Adigiwebe's comedy festival show that he brought around Australia just in the last couple of weeks. So got him in to come to the video store and talk about some of his favorite movies, and an excellent episode, as you can imagine.
All killer, no filler. Excited about that. And guys, if you're listening to One Heat Minute Productions, we have so many other shows. We're just finishing off Rome In, and I'm now deep into production of The Mincider, our next big Michael Mann series.
Fuck yes.
20 episodes. They are going to be structured like episodes of 60 minutes. And I can share with our lovely listeners here today that both Lowell Bergman, the real Lowell Bergman, and Academy Award winning editor William Goldenberg have been interviewed for the series so far.
Town.
So I've kind of a weird way I've done this time. I've gotten some of our biggest guests. Obviously, we're going to try and speak to the man himself to help conclude the series, but an array of unbelievable people who are going to be the central characters of these next 20 episodes, completely structured like episodes of 60 minutes. So they'll be the focal points. We'll have our scenes to talk through. William Goldenberg is going to focus on his amazing, probably the best edited scene of his entire career, the golf course scene with Russell Crowe, and so many other great things coming up. But Lowell Bergman, a total trip to talk to the man that is played by Al Pacino in that movie.
God almighty. Now you're just going to get the guy that Russell Crowe played.
Yeah, Jeffrey Wigand. If you're listening, the Imprint Companion, Come on out. Guys, thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you soon. So many good physical media titles coming up. Many more opportunities for us to talk. Huge list of great imprint collection releases coming. So we'll talk to you guys soon. There will maybe be some stuff. I'll pop up on socials, some unboxing stuff for some of these amazing sets before Alex and I come back and watch them together. I think we might have to get together for a couple of these big ones, especially The Keep. The Keep in the most epic set we've ever seen. Another like never-ending story level thing. So we'll have to get that going.
Unreal. Blake, always a pleasure. Never a chore, never a bore, babe.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.